Welcome to Mind Food Radio, Smart Thinking with Michael McHugh and Ben Starr.
And welcome aboard Mind Food Radio, episode number one. Michael, here we are live in the studio. How are you?
Very good, very exciting. Day one.
Oh, I tell you what. And they say things like this never happen. This is really cool. Now, you launched a magazine called Mind Food. Tell us how the radio show and everything else is coming together.
Well, from radio, we, of course, have got an online site at mindfood.com. We send newsletters out every week. There's a daily recipe we can send you. And, of course, now our very own radio show.
Coming up on today's show, we've got Tabitha Coffey.
Now, Tabitha's a very interesting interview. She's probably best known for going into American salons and pulling them all apart. Great reality television show.
You love personal training like I do?
Perhaps I think you love it a little more than I do, Ben.
David Welsh will be joining us.
Exactly, our personal trainer.
And coming up next, as we launch our very first show, stand by, live on the satellite, Nigella Lawson.
Mind Food Magazine. Your copy is on sale now.
This is a big interview for us.
It is.
I love chocolate. I love watching TV. I love watching this woman on TV.
Nigella Lawson. Look, she's so popular all around the world. She's been to Australia many, many times. Last year, she was on MasterChef. And yeah, it's great to have her here as our very first interview on Mind Food Radio. So, Nigella, what's the weather like?
I'm in London. I'm in very, very cold early morning London.
Well, I have to say, Nigella, when it comes to cooking, did you always like cooking?
Well, I'll tell you how, it was just slightly slower than that. I was just expected to cook as a child, and I was interested in food, although, funnily enough, not a great eater. But I liked, you know, it interested me in how it was cooked, and I thought about it. And then when I went to university, I found that just being used to cooking, being around cooking, made me the kind of, you know, the house cook. Also because, you know, I cook without a recipe, and I cooked cheap food, as you have to. I mean, that taught me the most, because cooking on a budget is really the best way of learning how to cook, because you have to learn how to make things taste good when the, you know, when the ingredients aren't so fabulous. So that's really when I became aware that actually I liked cooking and it was what I did. It wasn't because I really wanted to, it's just how it came. I suddenly realized I was the one who cooked. And then I found, you know, when I left and started working, I don't know, it just was an interest. Plus, really, it's a very good way as a journalist of putting off writing. And when I was a columnist, you know, when I was an op-ed columnist, I found that I would often make soup, because that chopping and stirring, very good way of not getting that awful brain freeze that you can get as you just sit staring at a computer.
Nigella, is eating in bed your ultimate indulgence?
Well, I don't think it's such a terrible thing. Therefore, it doesn't. It's not the ultimate indulgence in the sense of like, oh, it's this forbidden, wicked thing. It is nice. You're always not meant to do it. I don't like eating knife and fork food lying in bed, because then it becomes uncomfortable. But, you know, spooning food, excellent. And no cutlery food, very good. I mean, well, a bacon sandwich, fantastic. At the moment, I'm going through a kind of phase of rhubarb yogurt with pomegranate seeds in it. And I spoon that as I watch TV very happily. My bedside table has got mustard, Tabasco, salt, pepper, some crushed chilies. I mean, it looks like a part of the kitchen.
Now, tell us about your brand new DVD.
I so love it that the DVDs get in Australia, because in a sense, I feel that, well, I'm such a DVD person myself. I think there's nothing nicer, really, than lying in bed with a box set. But I feel the recipes are so varied in it, so that it kind of takes in the whole of life. You know, quick food, food you cook when you're stressed, food that you cook when you've got a bit of time, not necessarily in the kitchen, but that you can go and do other things. And I'm a great believer in, you either want to cook fast or you want things that don't need a lot done to them, and then do it all in the oven. So I'm pleased about that. So I'm really pleased.
Now, the flirtatious personality we see on TV, how close is that to the real Nigella?
I feel that once you get this whole thing about being in some way flirtatious or something, it's leapt on. My real feeling about that is that when I go around, and if I do whether I'm in England or Australia, or if I do a book signing, people come to it, they don't have that view of me. They've seen me from the TV. I think it becomes a shorthand. The one thing I'm not is a vamp. If you start thinking that what people say about you defines you, you're in trouble.
So, Nigella, when you're on set, how do you handle all that beautiful food?
When I film, it's not that I eat the food there, it's that the hours are so long and you get so tired. So I'm getting very stressed and overworked and not sleeping enough. it's like someone's taking a bicycle pump to me.
Well, yeah, look, I know how that feels.
Bye, Nigella.
Bye, Nigella.
Bye.
And we've got 6 DVDs of Nigella's brand new DVD to give away if you go on to mindfood.com.
Mind Food Magazine and Mind Food Radio. Together, smart thinking.
And on the line with us today, the author of The Girl with the Butterfly Tattoo. This is a brand new book and, of course, is written for young girls who are experiencing some of the biggest changes in their lives. Michael, you've got daughters.
I know. And look, as we all know, as parents, they don't come with a guidebook and, you know, wouldn't life be easier if they did? But this is, and, you know, we get so many books on our desk at Mind Food. This is an extraordinary book, The Girl with the Butterfly Tattoo. It is all about empowerment. It's all about self-belief. And, you know, as girls are entering different phases of their life, I think, Danielle, you have done a wonderful job. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. And I suppose I've written the guidebook, so to speak. I have 2 daughters of my own. I have a 13-year-old and a 17-year-old split daughter who lives with us full-time. And I've been a teacher in high schools for 7 years and worked with teen girls for the last 8. I knew, you know, that it was time to really give girls some solid strategies so that they could make sense of what is becoming an increasingly complex and changing world.
You know, Danielle, I have to say, I work in education as well. It horrifies me how many young girls I teach who have tattoos all over them.
Ah, so you're focused on the tattoo element of my title.
Yeah.
Look, girls do choose to adorn themselves in all sorts of different ways and express their individuality. But I've got to say, to me in education, it wasn't so much, you know, the piercings or the tattoos that concerned me as it was the toxic girl behaviour. And often, you know, girls can be looking like they're doing really well and they may be very well behaved in class and performing academically, but behind closed doors, they're silently imploding. And we know the statistics show us that so many young girls are dieting, are binge drinking on weekends, are engaging in really toxic self-talk that really limits their sense of who they are, and they define their currency as their looks, and I suppose that's why they try and enhance them in all kinds of ways, including in artificial ways.
You know, it's interesting. We just recently in Mind Food did a story on self-harm, and it's extraordinary the growth rate in teenage girls.
Yes, it is.
And they're intelligent girls. You know, these are girls that are doing well in school.
Yes.
And, you know, this was a whole kind of thing that's happening out there that we, you know, for me, I just wasn't aware of.
Yeah, I agree with you. The statistics show us that 1 in 10 teen girls self-harm as a way of dealing with their stress and anxiety, and that is an increase over the last couple of decades. Look, is that because we're now more open about talking about these things and reporting them? But certainly, I've got to admit as well, you know, as a teen girl growing up, none of my peer group engaged in this, yet many girls tell me today that they know girls who do self-harm. Why do they do that? They do that because they are a stressed and anxious generation.
Yeah.
Body image is the number one concern. Am I beautiful enough? Am I thin enough?
Yeah.
Well, I remember when my girl started year 7, and I remember talking to a mother, and she was telling us how many years her daughter had been coached. And I remember saying to my wife, Michelle, what does that mean, coached? I didn't get what she meant. But, you know, now this has become more of a norm where parents are spending huge amounts of money on these kids being coached so they get into better schools, and even when they're in the schools, they're still being coached. You know, there's an extraordinary pressure, as you say, in and around the whole academic world now.
Yeah, there absolutely is. And it isn't just academic coaching, although certainly that's also on the increase. It's the fact that we seem to overextend our children full stop. So many parents, you know, from very little will have their children going off to do a musical instrument, to do sport, as you say, to do academic coaching.
Yeah.
They might do some drama or some arts. That's all great, and it's wonderful to have a well-rounded child, but if it means that you're literally taxing them around every afternoon and they're tired and they're teary and they're feeling overwhelmed, then, as you say, maybe it's time for us to sort of step back a little and go, what really is important? And for children, often that's play.
Yeah.
Daniel, thank you. Look, your book, The Girl with a Butterfly Tattoo, has been reviewed in Mind Food. You can read the review in the latest edition of Mind Food and also on mindfood.com. Thanks a lot, Danielle.
Absolute pleasure. Lovely talking to you.
Yeah, thanks for joining us.
Mind Food Radio, smart thinking with Michael McHugh and Ben Starr.
Michael, we're always interested in some of the stories that you get, and you've been chatting with Tabitha Coffey. You've been doing a big article on this.
We have, and we've followed Tabitha's career. She, most of you would know her from Tabitha's Salon Takeover,
cool,
which is
cool.
It is a cool show where she goes into these salons and she makes them over. The salon owners often don't love it, but by the end of the show, you know, they love her, and they've kind of had this extraordinary transformation. So the thing is with Tabitha, she's here and she's traveling around New Zealand, Australia, and we're a great fan of hers, I've got to say, in Mind Food. It's very watchable. And welcome to the show, Tabitha. How are you?
I'm great, thank you. How are you?
Tabitha, I've got to tell you, everyone at the Mind Food office is so excited that we're talking to you today.
I love that. And I just got off a plane from LA.
Tabitha, we're great fans of Tabitha's Salon Takeover, but you're actually here in New Zealand, Australia with Joico, who you've worked for many years.
I have. I worked for Joico for maybe 12 years, and I'm back in Australia and New Zealand actually doing business classes for hairdressers, so I'm very excited.
And will it be like Salon Takeover, where you actually go into these salons and sort of, you know, see what's wrong and kind of point it out?
No, I'm not going into people's salons, although that would be fabulous. I'm actually just holding business classes for hairdressers. So, look, it's hard at the moment. The recession is really hard. It's all over the world. It's struggling for small business owners out there.
Mm.
So it's really just coming back home and being able to give, you know, tips and tricks and marketing advice and ways for people to actually stand out in the crowd so that they can keep their doors open and make some money and, you know, be the hairdressers that they want to be.
Tabitha, do most people, are they open to your advice when it comes to when you have to be really, well, so I suppose cutting and true to them?
Look, it's hard. You know, I walk, when I go in with the show, I go into these salons and they really only have a week, and I have a true week to take them over and turn them around. And I'm kind of like a mirror. So I point out all the things that they're doing wrong and all the things that they need to change. And it's really hard for people to internalize all of that and make the change. And that's where the resistance comes from. So some of them are really open to it. Some of them, you know, not so much. But as you guys watch the show, you see the people that really do make the change and it's really genuine, and you see the people that really don't make the change, and sometimes those people aren't around for much longer.
But those transformations, you know, the people that are really anti you in terms of what you stand for coming in, you know, how dare you kind of change my world, change my business, they're often the ones at the end that are just so, you know, full of praise and thank goodness, if it wasn't for you, you know, my life would have been so empty. What is that like in terms of giving those people that complete new lease on life?
Look, it's amazing. You know, I take it really seriously. I know it's a TV show, but, you know, for me it's really serious, and it's actually dealing with people's lives and dealing with people's livelihood, and the stakes are really high for a lot of these people that I go into. So for me it's really serious, and when people do make a change and when they can keep their doors open and when they can make money and get their life and business back on track, you know, it's the best reward that I can get, because during the three seasons of the show, I'm in contact with probably 85% of the businesses that I've taken over. And I know, you know, how they're doing and the improvements that they've made and the fact that, you know, they're doing really well and they've paid down their debt and all of those kind of things. And it really is so incredibly rewarding.
Yeah, it's so good to hear that, because I think as a viewer, you think of those reality TV shows as so such a slice of time, that it's great to hear that there is that sort of follow-up and genuine interest from you.
You know, I'm a hairdresser, so that's what I've done for 30 years, and it's what I love, and I really do care about these salons. I mean, that's part of where my aggravation comes from and my angst, and, you know, where you see me get really kind of PO'd, that all comes from me trying to help these people. So I don't want the cameras to go down and then me walk away and not be there for them. So they have my cell phone number, they have my email, and I'm in contact with them to make sure that they're okay. And if they need anything, I'm always there to be a cheerleader for them.
Tabitha, thanks so much. And enjoy your stay. You know, you return to home in Australia and travelling around New Zealand. It's been absolutely fantastic.
Fantastic. Thanks for talking to me, and it's nice to be home.
Mind Food Magazine and Mind Food Radio. Together, smart thinking.
Well, there's a woman who has definitely made a career out of telling people what to do.
But amazing from the background she came from, you know, sort of travelling around Australia like that as a child, and now in America doing what she's done. And that power of a reality TV show.
Well, you know, I'm hooked on those type of shows. I love to see the transformations that people take on. I mean, it's just advice, isn't it?
I know, and I think we all get sort of hooked up in that. And her show particularly, because they actually really do start out hating her, because she comes in very opinionated, very strong and gutsy. Yeah. And by the end of the show, of course, you know, they're all best friends. And
yeah.
But she said actually off air, which was really interesting, how she's going to transcend that across more than just sort of hair salons.
Oh, yes, you can definitely see that. You can definitely see that. And I think maybe her image, too, is quite off-putting to people when they first meet her. And it's like, oh, who's this woman coming in here?
Well, she's pretty gutsy. You know, she's very powerful. But, you know, it's an industry that she's, you know, she's adored in. You know, if you talk to any hairdresser and they've gone to one of her seminars, or she really is well-loved.
She is well-loved. Now, a little later on, we're talking about diets. We love diets. And we've got Megan Miller.
Well, we like sensible diets. I'm not so sure about loving a diet. But Megan Miller is an international food coach, and she does a lot of work with people all around the world in terms of eating sensibly. And as we all, you know, some of us struggle with our weight, and a lot of it, she tells us, is it comes down to emotional eating.
Yes, that's true. Now, Brad Argent, talking about emotions, is going to go back and look at the genealogy for us.
He's sort of got the job of like a giant gossip, really, because he snoops around people's histories and families.
All that and more coming up right here on Mind Food Radio. Okay, well, I tell you what, this is going to be an interesting interview. Have you ever wondered about your family and where they came from, Michael?
Yeah, probably just a little too much.
I don't want to know, but on the phone, who have we got?
Well, Brad Argent is the content director of Ancestry.com.au. Welcome, Brad.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Now, you've got a very interesting job in terms of finding out about people's histories.
One of the things that really hooks me, and I think this is what hooks a lot of people into family history, is, you know, busting those myths, finding out the secrets, and when you dig, the truth is often much, much stranger than the fiction that's been passed down through the family.
Have you ever come across, you know, a family line that has gone a completely different way than they thought, and you thought that was pretty horrific?
Well, look, you know, it's just a great story. One of our members tells a story about they always thought the family was Irish, you know, and so they had shamrocks around the house, and they all got crazy on St. Patrick's Day, and it was all about the Irish, and so he thought, I'd just do the family history and check that. And not a single Irishman in the family. They were all Scottish. So, you know, not so much Guinness and perhaps a little more haggis.
I imagine it would be quite humbling for people sometimes, some of the information that they find out.
Look, it can be. You know, you come across some stuff that can be a little bit confronting too. You know, when you look back at an ancestor who might have lived 100, 150 years ago, and you see that they had 14 children and five of them died in infancy, it can be really shocking, but you know, that was what life was like back then.
I guess in terms of connecting all the dots historically, you are also bringing people and families together now, aren't you? Because a lot of people then, you know, do reconnect or connect and then they meet.
Well, that's very true, and I'll tell you, this happened to me yesterday. Now, we had a member of ours who, you know, she knew she was adopted, but she went on to Ancestry. She found out that she had, you know, she found her birth mother. She found out that her birth mother was adopted. And then she found all these half-brothers and sisters that she had. She had a reunion. It was a wonderful story. They went on television and she told her story on television. I get this email from her yesterday. And she said, oh, I've had a look at your tree, Brad. And you've got these people in your tree. And it turns out we're related.
Oh, inbreeding.
So it's like, it is such a small world.
And Brad, is it relatively easy, you know, when you go online to fill out? Because, you know, if you're not sure of perhaps anything further than your grandparents, what happens then? Do you guys then get involved?
Oh, look, you know, there is so much information available on the web. On the Ancestry website, we have, 8 billion records from around the world. And if you can get back to your grandparents, for Australians and New Zealanders, it is, once you can do that, it is very easy to step back to the next generation and the next generation.
Oh, okay. So, Brad, so for the Everyday Joe blogs listening today, if they logged onto the website and have not a clue about how family history operates, is it pretty straightforward? I mean, could I actually operate it?
Oh, look, you could. If you can use Google,
yeah,
you can use Ancestry. You know,
okay.
Really, that simple.
Dan, I think that rules you out, though.
Michael arrived with microfish today, and I said, I think they've moved on from that era of trying to...
Hey, listen, Brad, thank you very much. I'm off to have microfish for lunch, but yeah, have a great day.
Yeah, you too, guys. Thanks.
Thank you, Brad.
Mind Food Magazine and Mind Food Radio. Together, smart thinking.
Okay, Michael, well, we've got a guy on the line called Michael Moore who is busy running his restaurant summit, cooking on television, climbing the ranks of top chefs in the world and travelling the globe. And he's with us today on the program.
Hi, Michael.
Hi, guys.
How are you?
Great to speak to you.
Yeah. Now, you had it well and still do have an extraordinary life. You were already a diabetic. I think you realised you had that around 35.
And that's right.
You were a top chef, I guess, surrounded by, you know, amazing food and that daily challenge of eating healthy. But one day it all changed, didn't it, when you had a major stroke in front of your family when you were out to dinner, and your life changed. Your whole philosophy around food changed, and you have created the most extraordinary cookbook, Blood Sugar Inspiring Recipes, for anyone facing the challenge of diabetes and maintaining good health.
When a stroke hits you, you're never prepared for it. You know, in your 40s, you're not thinking that, you know, a stroke is even on the horizon. You know, you can, there are certain illnesses and things that can you expect to happen, but a stroke certainly isn't one of them. And unfortunately, a lot of people don't survive a stroke in the way that I have. I have zero deficit, and, you know, I'm back to work, and everything seems to be working and in good order. So I'm a very lucky boy.
The night it happened, you know, in front of your family, your kids and your wife, what was their reaction? Like, just talk us through what immediately happened.
Well, I was actually cooking at the barbecue in the pub, and I was grilling steaks, and my kids were talking to the other people saying, my dad's a celebrity chef, and, you know, the other people saying, well, you can keep an eye on my steak, then I left my medium rare sort of thing. So it was all sort of a light-hearted Sunday afternoon sort of dinner. And, you know, I basically collapsed. And when they say that, you know, a stroke or a heart attack, you get a tingling in your arm and a feeling of numbness. Well, for me, it hit me like an elephant gun. I just crashed. I hit the floor, and my children were hysterical. My wife saw me on the floor and thought that I'd had a diabetic hypo, that I'd had a low sugar. And she said to the barman, grab some lemonade and orange juice and whatever. And then she realised that my whole left side was paralysed and I couldn't talk. And, you know, it was a pretty sort of scary situation for the family. And yeah.
Having seen your kids watch you go through that, I know you have found that very hard, haven't you?
Yeah, it was one of the hardest moments of the whole sort of experience, was hearing my 11-year-old daughter say to my mother that when they put Dad in the ambulance, I thought it was the last time that I was ever going to see him. And, you know, that as a parent, that is just like a brick to the head, you know. It's just an absolute shock.
So those relationships, those very close relationships with your wife and your children, how have they changed?
My relationships with everyone in my life have changed, in that as a person, I've been highly motivated and incredibly focused on the future and highly driven. And now, whilst I'm still driving forward, I'm enjoying where I am every day, and I enjoy being in the present. And just, you know, I'm happy to be at that barbecue or that lunch or something like that, and I'm not worried too much about what I'm doing that night or the next day. Whilst there's a plan there, I try to enjoy the moment. I listen to people a lot more than I did, and I'm sort of far more present than I was.
The cookbook Blood Sugar that you're about to launch, I get the impression is probably a cookbook you may not have ever published or dreamed of publishing 10 years ago.
No, absolutely. It was a stroke. My communications guy sort of works on sort of books and media with me. He came into the hospital whilst I was laying there in the bed, and he said, well, you know, well, I better look for a new job. Am I going to be retrenched, sort of thing? And I said, don't worry. I've come up with an idea. I'm going to write a book called Blood Sugar, and I'm going to become the poster boy for diabetic health and stroke recovery. And we sort of used blood sugar as part of my rehab.
Good on you. Michael Moore, congratulations. Fabulous book. And I know this radio interview and the story we're going to do with you in the pages of the magazine will definitely help people out there.
That's fantastic. It's been great talking to you guys.
Thanks.
Fantastic. Talking with Michael Moore, author of a brand new book called Blood Sugar. And, of course, for more details, go to mindfood.com.
Mind Food Radio. Smart thinking with Michael McHugh and Ben Starr.
Joining us on the line, we're going to be chatting with Megan Miller. Dieting, it's important.
Well, Megan Miller is actually an international weight management coach. She's been doing that for over 20 years. She helps people all around the world. She's written the most extraordinary story for us, The Psychology of Restriction. And like I think we probably much know, a lot of it comes down to emotional eating. Welcome to the show, Megan.
Hi, how are you?
What is it about restriction?
Well, what's been found is that as soon as you're told not to eat something, which we hear a lot at the moment, automatically a person becomes preoccupied with the very thing that they've been told not to eat. So there's a bit of a problem with that because we've heard a lot about eat low fat, don't eat chocolate, stay away from chippies. And what's been found is that those are, in fact, the very foods that people tend to go for. And the other thing is that in reality, when, you know, those foods that people think are high in fat or high in sugar will automatically make them gain weight. But if you think about it, if you ate one piece of cake and that's all you ate all day, what's going to happen is that you're likely to lose weight. So it's the volume of food, really, that... Is the main thing in the recipe.
Megan, do you think in society we've become too preoccupied with dieting?
Absolutely. It's become the norm now. So what we're finding is we've gone away from more the fad diets, although I know people still do try those, into this new healthy eating approach to weight loss. And in fact, the healthy eating approach is in itself still restrictive. So we've still got all those external cues to eat rather than using our own internal hunger cues to eat. So we're still listening to all the rules that we're told from eat six meals a day or only eat three meals a day with no snacking. So it's definitely still out there, and it is now proven that our attitudes towards eating restrictively is in fact considered quite normal now. So we don't even really know that we're doing it. We think,
well, that's the thing. I think also in restricting, you know, having a restrictive diet or restricting certain foods, there is a long-term health thing here that, you know, I think everyone is so preoccupied with diet and you know, whether it's in our children or our families. But are there any studies long-term that show, you know, perhaps what this has really played out to be?
Well, that's the problem, is a lot of the studies that portray dieting as being successful, or certain diets being successful, are only very short term. So it's only about 6 months to a year. Where in actual fact, it's usually 5 years or over that we need to take a look at. So what we're finding is it's just not sustainable because of this problem with the preoccupation. It's only a matter of time before someone can keep that up, and it's like a time bomb waiting to go off.
What's your top three points that you would say to people about dieting? If they're listening today and they're thinking, I've got to go on a diet or I've got to do something with my life, what could I do?
Rather than listen to external cues to tell you when to eat, the first thing would be to start listening to your own hunger. Your body tells you, it knows exactly how much food it needs. So naturally, it's the last thing people will do is go, am I actually hungry when I want to eat something? So first of all, is listening to your own hunger cues. Are you hungry? Stop when you've had enough. Second is take all the restrictions away and eat so that you feel totally satisfied. You're less likely to overeat in that case. And the third one is to get down to the core of what's actually driving you to eat, which is often missed within the weight management industry.
Well, we've been chatting with Megan Miller today about dieting, and of course for more details go to mindfood.com. Thank you, Megan, for your time.
Thank you.
Well, trapped in a terrifying relationship, isolated from friends and family, this woman that we're about to talk to, Michael, must decide what she values most and then fight for it.
Well, you know, domestic violence is an absolutely horrific part of society, and whenever we run a story on mindfood.com or in the magazine, it's extraordinary the feedback we get in terms of how it's helped people, particularly women, in this situation. And I'm really happy to welcome you, Kay, to the show.
Thank you.
Kay, can you tell us your story?
Well, I was approaching 40. I was in a relationship that was going nowhere. I really wanted a baby, and I'd made that pretty clear. So I set myself up for this fellow called Simon, who was gorgeous, charismatic, charming, waltzed into my life, promised me a baby, promised me a wonderful family unit. I fell for it, and very quickly he turned into a violent narcissist, and it was terrifying, and I couldn't get him out, and I was trapped.
Now, it became violent, didn't it?
Yeah, unfortunately, very quickly.
And who did you turn to, or how long did it take you to turn to someone when it did become violent?
The tricky part was that he started to undermine me emotionally and psychologically, and he also isolated me from my family and friends. And then he started to become physically violent. By that stage, I actually felt quite trapped and isolated, and it was very, very hard to talk to anyone. I felt very ashamed. And I really went to the police first because they were around the corner. I had to run on one occasion, and that's where I landed outside the police station. I was so terrified when I scrambled back into the apartment when he let me back in. I didn't know what to do.
Now, a lot of people listening to UK will be able to identify with this in that absolute hopelessness and feeling trapped. Okay, you identified a police station around the corner from where you lived. But for people that perhaps don't see that, what do you recommend, having gone through this and being isolated from your friends and family, what do you suggest?
First of all, you have to draw on your own strength, and that would be my big message. As frightened as you are, you do have the courage, you do have the reserves inside you, so you've got to dig deep, you've got to pull up your socks, and you've got to stand up for yourself and believe in yourself. And then go back to your friends and family. If they find it hard to believe or you're ashamed, put that aside. Insist that people listen to your story. And then 000, the local police station, get those numbers in your phone, get them memorised. And the police are amazing. They will come, they'll be there in a heartbeat, and they will not let go.
And just tell us, Kay, what happened then? You went to the police, and just play it out for us.
I had to go to court to get that ratified. You are protected immediately, but there's an AVO granted by the magistrate over the phone, and I didn't quite understand that. I thought I was still very vulnerable, but I was in fact protected. But still, if you're home and away from the police station and then he's around, there's no one to protect you then. You are very vulnerable. So get the police on your side. As the domestic violence liaison officer will hold your hand. They'll protect you and they'll help you through. That piece of paper, it will help you. Sometimes it's a red rag to a bull, unfortunately. But and then if you can, press charges. Get all the protective mechanisms in place if you can. Failing that, get the hell out.
Kay, you've written an extraordinary book about this. It's obviously a true story. It's called Perfect Stranger. What happens when the man of your dreams makes your life a nightmare? I want to thank you, Kay. I know there'll be many of our listeners and readers of Mind Food that will identify, and I know you would have helped particularly some women out there. So thank you very much, and thanks for writing this book. It's a brilliant book, and for more details, go to mindfood.com.
Great, thank you very much.
Mind Food Magazine and Mind Food Radio. Together, smart thinking.
What a brave woman.
Powerful story. And you know, this is actually Kay's very first interview she's ever done, and I know her story will help many, many people out there.
It's quite scary, isn't it, to think that people have to go through that?
I know, and you know, she was brave to turn to the police, and it's so great to hear a positive story of that working out for her. You know, she turned to the right people, and they really helped her.
Yeah, she really did. And a great story. And of course, more details on that.
That's right. And you know, you can send us your story if you'd like your story to be told in the magazine or online or here on Mind Food Radio. Just send it to us at mindfood.com.
Okay, not too far away, we've got our final segment today. We always we'll sort of end on an upward beat, and you're looking good in your gym uniform.
You're more happy about this one than I. I'm dragging my gym shoes to this one, my sneakers.
Yeah, David Welsh, he's our fitness guy.
Our personal trainer. Look, he's a great guy, but, you know, as I said, today's show is really about, you tell him, it's about how to get fit.
Now, if we'd like to win a prize today, you've got some great details there.
You can head head to mindfood.com and you can go in the draw to win 6 Joico Daily Care Balancing Gift Packs. Now, they're valued at $50 and they're great for both men and women.
Now, does that mean you get 2 prizes to balance, one in both hands?
Well, coming up with David, our personal trainer, that does make sense.
Right here on Mind Food Radio. And of course, for more details, go to mindfood.com.
Mind Food Radio, smart thinking with Michael McHugh and Ben Starr.
Well, we've got David with us today, who is a fitness fanatic. And Michael's sitting there thinking, I don't want to talk about fitness.
Oh, God. I would be your worst client, David.
Not at all. Not at all. There's no such thing as a bad client.
How do you start a fitness program?
How do you start? The most important thing when it comes to a fitness program is you must have a goal. You can't just go in there and, you know, just think, okay, I think I'm going to do a little bit of this and a little bit of that. You choose one or two goals, and you aim to achieve those goals.
So like what, though? Like, tell me a couple of goals. What are some people's goals?
A specific goal can be for some people, particularly for a lot of my female clients. Obviously, the main priority they're generally looking at is weight loss.
Okay.
So if I have specific female clients that I will look at, and straight away they come to me and say, I would like to lose more weight, and if I don't think that they actually need to lose the weight, then my next priority for those ladies is to actually make them stronger. However, there are some of my female clients that I do have who could, you know, definitely have the ability to be a fit and healthier person by dropping weight.
But that would also go for men. Like, you'd get a lot of clients that want to lose weight that are male as well.
Absolutely, and the same thing applies for, you know, for a lot of my men. I've got men clients that range in my male bracket from the age of 16 up to the age of 72. It's my oldest male client.
Wow. So how do you make exercise fun? Because for a lot of people, exercise is not like the top of their priority list.
Sure. So a great thing to do is number two, train with a friend. Yeah. If you don't have a training partner, and I think that one of the biggest mistakes that a lot of people make is that you don't have to get fit inside a gym. You can go outside.
How important is walking?
It is important because it is still a form of exercise. If you are a person that has what you call a sedentary lifestyle, that doesn't really do a lot of movement, and then all of a sudden they're walking 3 times a week, that's progression.
That is progression, yeah.
So even I say to a lot of my clients as well, you know, they said, David, I'm really, really tired today. I don't feel like coming to the gym. No dramas. How about you do me a favour? Head down to the beach, head to your nearest park, and just go and give me a walk. It is still a form of exercise.
So if they want to get on board our Mind Food Fitness program here, what are 3 things that they could do today to change their life?
Number one, have a specific goal, whatever the goal is. Number two, have a specific plan to reach that goal.
Mm-hmm.
And number three, have fun. They're my top 3. Always. It has to be fun. If you ever think that it's not fun, it will be the first thing that you'll actually exclude and think, I'm not enjoying it anymore. I can't be bothered to do that today.
David, thank you very much. There's going to be more information on this on mindfood.com, and we'll talk to you next week.
Much appreciated. Have a great day, guys.
I can't believe it. We're at the end of the show. I feel like Cinderella.
Our very first one. Feels good, though, eh?
It does feel good.
And next week's show, actually, it's a really interesting guy we're going to talk to, David Gillespie. He's the author of a book, fairly controversial. It's called Big Fat Lies, How the Diet Industry is Making You Sick, Fat and Poor.
Oh, gosh.
I know.
It's a bit of an interesting interview.
I've got to be honest. I think he's anti-sugar.
I know. And also, Betty White.
Yes. Are you old enough to remember her and Mary Tyler Moore?
No.
All right.
Golden Girls.
All right. Yeah. But she was.
We're showing our age here.
She was in Mary Tyler Moore.
But she was.
Who doesn't love Betty White, though?
Oh, look, we all love her. All that and more right here on Mind Food Radio.
Mind Food Radio Smart Thinking was produced in the studio of Radio Australasia. Produced by Ben Starr and Brian Newington and Patrick K. Roos. Bogart Torelli speaking.